Welcome back to Strength 101, the podcast where we break down fitness and nutrition into its simplest form so that you can get the results that you want. Hey guys, it's me, it's Nick. We're doing another solo session, and today we're going to talk about how you can achieve all your hopes and dreams in this life. We're going to talk about motivation, discipline, and accountability. A little bit different than what we normally talk about, because usually we're talking nitty-gritty nutrition and technique and training and how to achieve your goals from that side. Now, this is all about the mental side. But before we get into that, I want to shout out a couple people that clearly already have motivation, discipline, accountability, and they now have the achievement. Those are two of our members. First one is Jeff R. Just recently ran 66 miles in an ultra marathon endurance, whatever the heck you want to call it. Jeff, you're going to have to tell me exactly what you call that. I call it insane and super impressive. How long was he running for, Stet? 6 a.m. on Saturday to 2 a.m. on Sunday, you said? That's insane. That's insanity. That's exactly insanity. It's not ultra marathon. It's not endurance running. It's insanity. And also, Brandy P did something very similar. She also ran her first endurance event, 50 miles, and what's this one? 14 hours in the rain is what she did. That's just crazy. And so these are people that are also strong as hell. They're in our gym training with weights all the time. And it just goes to show too that you can do both of these things, and that, you know, weight training supplements endurance and endurance supplements weight training. But just crazy impressive. And if you saw both of these guys, or guy and girl, but both of them, jacked. They got muscle and they can go the distance, like Hercules, right? Okay. Anyways, back to what we're talking about today. We're going to talk about motivation, discipline, and accountability. And these are all buzzwords, right? These are buzzwords that get thrown around all the time. Like when we're thinking about how things get things done, you hear them constantly. Motivation, discipline, accountability. But what the hell do they really mean? I think that the definitions that get thrown around, I have an issue with, and so I want to talk about it today. Motivation and discipline are amongst the tops for sure. We hear it all the time from our members, from our friends, from our family. I want to do this, but I just don't have the motivation. I'm not motivated to go here or there, even if it's just going to like something you signed up for a week ago, like you told your friends you were going to go to happy hour, and then I don't have the motivation to get off the couch. I want to keep working out, but I'm not very disciplined. A lot of people put that label on themselves, and I do think these labels are kind of thrown around and that we need to define them, and I think if you can wrap your head around these terms a little bit differently, it makes it easier for you to see a clear path to how you need to conduct yourself and what pillars you need to put into place to actually achieve what you want to achieve in this life. So frankly, I think these words get used a lot, but they're not very helpful. All of these terms kind of form this mindset that it's all my personal responsibility to organize my life, get shit done, and achieve everything I want. And you know, that's technically true, but part of the issue I have with this is feeling like you need to do it alone, or that you're a lesser person or a lesser achiever if you get help in doing these things. And so for some reason, and like, I think we all have somebody that we can imagine in our head that's like this, somebody who you follow on Instagram, somebody who's written a book that's been a New York Times bestseller. But for some reason in our society, we hold at the pinnacle of admiration this random person who wakes up the earliest, does the hardest tasks in the shittiest conditions with the least amount of help. And in my experience, that's just not how I've gotten things done. Now, is my name David Goggins? No, my name is Nick Byam, and nobody knows my name outside of you listening to this. So maybe if I did things earlier in the morning and I did them in shittier conditions and I did it with less help, then I'd be a better person. But you know, I'm proud of the things that I've achieved in my life, and I think that there's definitely different ways to go about it. And I think that sometimes this stuff gets put up on a pedestal, and we just don't have to listen to it. You don't have to listen to it if you don't want to. Now, don't get me wrong, you're not going to achieve anything in this life if you're looking for the path to be easy. There's just some things that require sacrifice, and usually the more desirable the achievement that you're looking for, the more sacrifice that's going to be required. You're certainly going to lose sleep for some of your goals, or you're going to lose social time because you have to get more sleep. You're going to have to do things you don't want at times that you don't want to do them. And sometimes you're going to have to show up when nobody else does. But that's sometimes, all right? That's just sometimes. That's not all the time. The majority of the results that you get in life, the majority of achievements, come from what you do most of the time. It's the daily actions. It's what you can get yourself consistently to do, not those outliers that you do some of the time. And this is where I think we can all get help. So here's my issue with some of these terms. I'm going to define some of them, and then we're going to dig into, you know, where I think these definitions are helpful and how I would redefine them. Start with motivation. Quick Google search. You know, it's like the start of every high school essay or paper. Or you like, remember Stet when you would go to college and everybody had to give a speech and then be like, motivation. Well, Webster's defines motivation. So this is whatever, ChatGPT or whoever, defines motivation as an internal state that propels individuals to engage in goal-directed behavior. All right, let me say that in not such a weird voice. An internal state that propels us to engage in goal-directed behavior. So it says it in the definition. It's a state. Okay, a state is temporary. A state is fleeting. It happens every once in a while. Maybe you can make that happen. You can watch a motivational video. And motivation is exactly that. It's a feeling. It's a feeling that you get when you start to envision what you could have. And you start to envision doing the tasks. It's not the actual doing of it, but it's the envisioning. It's the thinking about it. It's the getting excited about it. And trust me, it's the best damn feeling. Like when you're motivated to do something, you just feel like everything is already in your hands. And the only thing you forgot is that you actually still have to do it. But that's not something you can rely on day in and day out. Motivation's a mental game. It's the vision. You can do things for a while, but then if your conditions change, your motivation's going to change. I find motivation to be highly dependent on energy levels, especially if it's positive motivation. So let's define these two things, positive and negative motivation, because both of them are really important. You actually need both of them if you're going to get where you want to go. So positive motivation is the feeling of wanting something more. It's being driven towards that goal that's up on the hill. It's the achievement of that goal. It's the mouse chasing the cheese, for lack of a better term, right? The mouse wants to eat. It's hungry. It wants the thing. It wants that extra thing, that thing that's going to make it feel good. It wants to go get the cheese. And when it's hungry and it has energy, it can go after that cheese really fast and can work for days to get that cheese. But what if the mouse is half fed and kind of sleepy and it's not really that hungry anymore? Well, the desire to chase the cheese is like gone, right? So that's your motivation. It's like, it's great when you're energetic and you're thinking about your goals and you have a clear vision and you're hungry for it. But then as soon as you're tired and you're half fed and you know, the couch is feeling cozy, sometimes it just dissipates. And that's normal. That's a normal human thing. And that's why I think you can't rely on motivation. I still think there's a use for motivation. Don't get me wrong. But in like positive motivation especially. I used to motivate myself to go to the gym all the time. I think a lot of people, now that I'm like a little bit older and I've been training for so many years and it's such like, it's clear that I've been training multiple times a week for years now, they just think it's something that's like easy. And it is easy now. It's like something I don't even think about doing, which we'll get into. But when I first started training, it was not a habit. And I had to motivate myself to get to the gym every day. And there was a couple different things that motivated me. One of the positive motivations was me putting on YouTube videos. I would sit at my desk, at my desk job at an organic dairy. And I didn't love my job. I'll just be honest. Sorry to anybody listening to this who worked there. I didn't love my job. I'm working in a freaking lab. I didn't see the sunshine ever. And all I wanted it to be was like a jacked bodybuilder. And so at like whatever time I got off, 4 o'clock at 3:50 on my computer, I would turn on YouTube videos like motivational Les Brown, Eric Thomas, like you gotta want it. You gotta need it. Like just talking shit in my ear. And then I would just caffeinate up. And so that by the time it was ready, I was ready for my 15-minute drive to go back to my hometown to the gym. I was like jittering and I just had it in my head. You want it. You can be anything you want to be. I was just going nuts for it. And that was a great feeling. And honestly, it got me to the gym most of the time because I definitely wasn't going to go home with that much caffeine in me. So I would definitely go to the gym. And that was another one of my rules, was make sure that you never go home before you try to go to the gym. You pack your bag, you go straight to the gym, you never go home. But that's positive motivation. And when I had that habit of doing that for myself, then I made sure that I made it to the gym. And in those moments, I was chasing something that I desired. It was, I'm going to be better. I'm going to be more. I'm going to, you know, it's you're going to, everybody's going to love you when you're jacked type of mentality. It was great. But then there's also negative motivation. And negative motivation, on the other hand, tends to have a little bit more staying power, but it might not be as good for your mental health. But I still think it's super necessary. And I think all the studies have shown that you are at your best and you are at your peak of goal-directed behavior when you are both chasing something you want and being chased by the thing that you don't want, right? So a good example of negative motivation, for me at least, was when I was training to go on stage for a physique show. I was motivated to train in the way that I just talked about, positive motivation, hyping myself up with videos, watching Jay Cutler and Ronnie Coleman be all jacked, watching Arnold videos. But then this was my first experience with negative motivation to get in the gym, was when I signed up for a physique show and said, I'm actually going to step on stage and show off my body. All of a sudden, I'll be honest, I was shitting my pants. I was like, wait a second, who am I to think I can step on stage with these other guys? I'm going to look stupid. All of a sudden, my training became extremely regimented. My nutrition became extremely regimented. I was highly motivated to do this the right way and to step on stage looking awesome, not because I was like, man, I will be so admired when I look awesome on stage. I'm going to win a trophy, but because I was like, I don't want to be embarrassed. I don't want to look like shit next to these people. I just don't want to stand next to these other people and look like a loser. And that's negative motivation. And it was extremely empowering. And that's what got me through, you know, 8, 10, 12 weeks of training. I was way more motivated by that than being like, one day I'm going to look like Arnold and I'm going to be in the movies. You know, that just, they're just different things. But then, you know, that worked for a little while. It worked through the entirety of getting to that show. And frankly, when I stepped on stage and I won my class for that show, it was less of a feeling of excitement because of the way I had motivated myself. And it was more of a feeling of relief. It was like, oh, okay, I didn't embarrass myself. I'm relieved. I'm happy that it went the way I wanted. I'm happy that I didn't let myself down and let the imaginary people that were going to judge me down. It wasn't as much as excitement as it was relief. And so that motivation worked extremely well right up until it didn't, which was the end of the show. I achieved my goal of not embarrassing myself and stepping on stage and beating the other competitors. And then all of a sudden, that motivation was gone. Completely gone, like a sharp cliff. And I remember this. I remember this like it was yesterday. I had just gone through this nice roller coaster. I was so happy, right? Like I had won, had this trophy. Like, you know, there's all these pictures of you looking badass on stage. You go out, you celebrate with friends and family afterwards. It was a really cool moment. And then the you know, that was on a Saturday or something. And then Monday I'm driving to work again. And I'm driving on the way to work and I just start crying. I just absolutely started bawling, like on my way to work. Like, what is there to be sad about? It's a Monday. I just had one of the best weekends of my life. Like, everything about my life seemed to be going well. And I was just crying my face off. And I just didn't know what to do with all this emotion that I had. And I remember calling my dad and being like, what the hell's wrong with me? You know, and he walked me through it and what the realization that I came to. And now looking back on it, it's very clear that, you know, I had this thing that was motivating me, both positive and negative, pushing that motivation, pushing me to achieve my goals, pushing me to just get daily feedback that I was walking towards something that I valued every single day. And then as soon as it was done, as soon as that motivation was no longer there, I felt empty, I felt vacant, and there was like no purpose to my life. I know that sounds crazy. It sounds kind of sad that there would be no purpose to your life if you're not going to step on stage for a show. But that's the state that I was in my mid-20s at that point. And so I think it's very important that we be careful using motivation as our only thing to achieve our goals. Because, you know, motivation can be very fleeting, like we said. And most grand achievements, most things that you really want to achieve over your lifetime, they happen over the long term. And to achieve things over the long term, we have to show up and do the work even when we're not motivated. You know, like getting back into the gym after my motivation was gone was really hard. And like, I don't remember that time period. I don't know if I went through a stage where I took time off or if I just, you know, signed up for the next thing or what it was. But I know that day I probably didn't go to the gym because like, why the hell would you go to the gym after you just won a physique show? Like you just take a few days off, right? But this is where discipline comes into play. That's really what discipline is, right? Is discipline is your ability to show up even when you're not motivated. So when motivation is not driving you, discipline is what has to be there to take its place. Otherwise, you just don't do the things that you said you wanted to do. But I think discipline is probably the most misunderstood, or at least the most, I hate to say this, but like toxified term out there. It's like discipline is just this amalgamous term that means like you do shit on your own and you do it from your gut and you just force yourself to do things you don't want to do. I think that's what it means to a lot of people. But we'll define it once again, high school style. Well, Webster's Dictionary says that discipline is the self-control that is gained by requiring that rules or orders be obeyed and the ability to keep working at something that is difficult. So let's break this down because I think there's actually something really important in there. Self-control gained by obeying rules/orders. This is actually the key here. Discipline is about building self-control. It's about building a process. Really, discipline is just a fancy word for habit. That's all it really is. Discipline is a fancy word for habit. Most people who are disciplined do not feel disciplined. They feel like it's just what they do. Like I think people in our gym think that I am disciplined at training, but I don't feel disciplined at it. You know, I don't like wake up in the morning and be like, you're so disciplined that you went to the gym. No, it's just what I do. It's a habit. It's just something that you don't even question anymore. And really, if you try to redefine this term, you realize that we're all extremely disciplined at something. I make myself coffee every damn morning. Every damn morning, making coffee. I never skip it. And I could say that I'm extremely disciplined at making and drinking coffee. But we don't say that, right? You say, well, I have a coffee habit or I have a caffeine addiction. You know, let's just, like, we just don't use the word discipline for that. But discipline is just rebranding habits as good or empowering. Like, somebody could say, like, I am extremely, what do I want to say? I use the same thing with energy drinks. Like, I'm always stopping to get a damn energy drink on my way to gym in the morning. And I could say that I'm extremely disciplined at getting an energy drink every single morning. And there's just things that, like, somebody could say, because some people will say, I'm really disciplined about not drinking in social situations. Well, somebody could say they're extremely disciplined about never going to the gym, right? Like, hey, they drive by that gym, and as much as their body wants them to go into that gym, they say no. Just say no. And so discipline is really how you frame it. So like I said, discipline is just a fancy word for habit. You can put discipline in front of habit all day long. You can say that, you know, I don't have addiction to cigarettes. I have discipline at smoking every 20 minutes, you know? So however you want to define it. But habits can be short-term or they can be long-term. And once a habit is long-term, I'd argue that it's part of your identity. Now, I told you guys in the motivation segment that I used to motivate myself to train, but that doesn't happen anymore. I don't watch YouTube videos about how big I'm going to get or how awesome my life's going to be if I go to the gym anymore. It just doesn't happen anymore. Honestly, most days I complain like crazy in the trailer for 20 minutes about how I don't want to train, and then I go and do it anyways. And so the question is more so like, well, why? What's the difference between who I was, you know, 10 years ago having to motivate myself to train and who I am today where I can complain about it for 20 minutes, I'm still going to get up and go do it. Well, like I said, discipline is just a fancy word for habit, but habits can be short-term or they can be long-term. And once a habit is long-term enough, I would argue that it's part of your identity. I know that's what it is for me, and I think that's what it is for our gym members who are the most consistent and who get the best results over time is it becomes part of their identity. I just keep using myself as an example. I'm a gym owner. I've been training people for 15 years. My identity is completely tied into my training and my aesthetic. Like, the aesthetic of my body is legitimately like part of my identity. If people walk into my gym or they meet me for the first time and I'm wearing my gym's logo and I'm overweight and I'm out of shape, they view the gym differently. Like, there's just no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Like my look is part of what sells the gym because it's like, well, this guy does the work. He has a look that maybe I want to achieve. I will now listen to him, or I think that their product is worth having. And so it's my identity. And because it's my identity, I almost never question doing the work to maintain it. It's like it changes your standard. Like, I joke that there's two things that are keeping me from ever like truly being overweight. One of them is I have a massive scar down the front of my stomach. And that scar goes all the way through my abdomen. It's from a surgery when I was a kid. And so I think if I ever did get overweight, because that scar can't get pushed out, it goes all the way through, then I basically would develop what would look like a butt on the front of my stomach. And so that's extremely motivating to me, and that keeps me from ever being overweight. But the second thing is that I am a gym owner, and that, like, this is my look. It's part of my identity. And so I think that the standard will be there forever. It'll be interesting to see, honestly, sitting here at 36 years old, whether that identity stays until I'm 70, because it feels like it's so ingrained in me now that it'll never go away. But if it does go away, it'll probably be a very difficult and painful thing because it'll be a legitimate shift in my identity. I would actually have to shift the way I view myself and who I think I am to really get out of this state of keeping myself in this type of shape. And I think that does happen for people, but if you do something long enough, it becomes a part of you and then you no longer question what it is. And so, you know, if I started to put on too much weight or I got out of the gym for too much long, I really think my brain would start to freak out. It would start to say, like, you're not being who you say you are. You start to get like a wedge in your brain about who you are. You start to split yourself into two people. It's who you are and who you tell yourself you are. And that starts to become extremely stressful. And so that's why people, you know, work to maintain their identities at all time. Discipline also tends to come in the form of what interests us. You know, like I liked the gym. I liked it because it helped me at sports. I liked it because I had friends in the gym and I was having a good time. I liked it because when I worked out when I was young, I was so skinny, I could look in the mirror and see the results right away. And so it was something that interested me. And it makes sense, right? Like, if you like something, you're more likely to do it. And if you're more likely to do it frequently, then eventually you're going to do it frequently enough, it's going to become a habit. And like we said, if it's a habit, boom, you are now disciplined at it. So how do we create discipline in the areas that we aren't interested in? It's not forcing it. It's not talking shit to yourself. It's not about staying hard, motherfuckers. It's about finding a way to get yourself to do the damn thing until it's an automatic process. And this is where accountability comes in. And I think this is the key piece for people who struggle with motivation, for people who struggle with discipline, or if you've just been defining those terms incorrectly in your head and telling yourself a story about what it's going to take to get there. I think the missing piece and the piece that people are scared to take advantage of is accountability and accountability through others. All right, let's talk about accountability. So we're gonna define the term again, just like we did on these other ones. This one's very quick, very short. Accountability, being answerable for one's actions. Now I'll tell you my experience. Here's my experience. If I'm the one that's answerable to my own actions, I will completely trick myself. I will do one of two things to get out of doing. I will always get out of doing something I don't want to do. I'm telling you, it's like it's almost an art form how good I am at procrastinating and getting out of doing things I don't want to do. And I think like Stettler's sitting here laughing right now as I say this. I think because he knows that's freaking true, and he probably sees me do it. So I will do one of two things if I really don't want to do something and I've told myself I have to do it. One, I will rationalize it. I will come up with a reason why I do not have to do it, and guess what? I will not do it, and somehow, some way, maybe not healthy for me, I will feel totally fine about it because I am just tricking myself. I'm just convincing myself that it's totally fine not to do it, and sometimes I'm like, I will believe myself, and I'll just move forward. And then, you know, eventually that comes with pain later probably, but we're not going to talk about that. The other way that I handle it is I rebel against myself entirely. Whatever I'm telling myself to do, I tell myself, screw you for telling me to do this, and then I don't do it, and then I feel shitty about it, both because I'm mad at myself that I was making myself do it, and I'm also mad at myself because I didn't do what I told myself to do. Yes, very, very mentally healthy, right? But I honestly think, like, I mean, if this happens in my head, it's got to be happening in other people's heads too. I mean, that's got to be a common thing. I'm going to look to Stettler real quick just as, like, some reassurance that I'm not crazy about this. Do you do that to yourself, Stettler? Yeah, you tell yourself you're supposed to do something, and then you don't do it. And now you're pissed at yourself because you're also, not only are you an overload, terrible boss, but you're also a horrible employee, right? Like you're shitty at telling yourself to do things, and you're also shitty at actually doing them. And so you're shitty on two accounts, and it's just like an extrapolation of shittiness. So anyways, that's you know, when you're trying to hold yourself accountable. Now, some people are great at it, but people like me, maybe not so much about holding myself accountable. And it's because people have different affinities towards like accountability and the different types of accountability. And I'm going to use another word for accountability here to explain this, and that's going to be expectations. And now, just being transparent, guys, I read this book a long time ago. What was the book again? The Four Tendencies by Gretchen Rubin. This really helped me understand my clients better, helped me understand myself better. I think it's just a nice framework for how we build habits and how we deal with both internal and external expectations. And so in this book, she defines internal expectations as being the things that we tell ourselves we want to do, the standards that we hold for ourselves. So a good example is like brushing your teeth. You know, like I hold myself accountable very easily because it's a habit now to brushing my teeth in the morning. And no matter how much the 4-year-old inside of me goes, nah, don't brush your freaking teeth, Nick. I don't wanna, you know, I just wanna go straight to bed. Like I still brush my damn teeth. And so there are certain things that we hold ourselves accountable to very easily based on our internal expectations. And then there's external expectations. Those are the expectations that other people have for us. And so a good example of that is like, you know, if Stettler is expecting me to show up to sit down and do this podcast, it doesn't matter how many things in my head are going, don't do it, you don't want to do it, oh, you know, I don't feel organized about this. Because he's expecting me to do it and I am holding myself accountable to the external expectation and that's my tendency, I'm going to sit down and do it. And that's what happened today, right? Like if he was weak or if I hadn't scheduled for him or with him and he wasn't ready for me, I just would have not wanted to do this today. But I'm glad I'm doing it because we're talking now and this is kind of fun. So I'm going to quickly go through the four tendencies that she describes and kind of like give you a chance to kind of think about it for a little bit. And I think you're going to be able to identify which one you are very easily. So there's four of them. There's the upholder, there's the questioner, there's the obliger, and there's the rebel. And I'm sorry, Gretchen, if you ever listen to this, and I am butchering your life's work, but this is how I understand it. So you have internal expectations. Those are the things that you're trying to hold yourself accountable for. And there's external expectations, which are the things that somebody else outside of you is holding you accountable for. And the upholder is good at both. This is the person that's extremely type A. They're very good at getting things done. They run off a schedule. They're almost cold to a certain extent because whatever is expected of them, both internally and externally, gets done. This is the person that is dialed in. We hope that our lawyers are this way. We hope our doctors are this way. We hope that the people who are running our government are this way, but I don't think so. But we won't get into that. And these are the people that just get shit done because they have an easy time upholding both internal and external. And so this is the friend that you have that it's so annoying how disciplined they are. It's so annoying how easy it is for them to tell themselves to do something and they just start doing it. The second one is a questioner. And a questioner has an easy time upholding internal expectations, but they have a difficult time upholding external expectations. When I tested this, I was actually a questioner, which is interesting because I adhere drastically to people's external expectations. But the definition here for the questioner is that they have an easy time upholding internal expectations because they have the reason why they should do it. They're very like, they like to question things. They like to have a reason. They like to have the why behind things. And this is exactly how I am. My parents got so sick of me asking why as a kid. Why? I tell our team all the time, like, if you ask why one more time, you're going to get the answer to what you need to do next. So as a questioner, if I can tell myself the reason for why I want to do something, like I need to go to the gym because I need to uphold my body because I am, I am the person that, shows up on these videos and is the face of the gym, then like that's an easy thing for me to uphold. So as a questioner, easy for me to do. Now, if somebody else tells me to do something, it's not that I won't do it. It's just that I'm going to ask, why the fuck should I do that? You know, it's like, I'm just going to ask that straight up. Like if Stetler comes to me and he just tells me like, I need you to do this and he doesn't give me a reason, like he probably knows. And I'm gonna be like, why are we doing this? Like, and if somebody just gives me a good reason why, then boom, I can uphold an external expectation all day. It's easy for me to show up for this podcast because we've had so many conversations about why this podcast is important for building this brand and giving information to everybody out there. And so I'm going to show up for it. Taking too long on this. The obliger is somebody who has difficulty upholding internal expectations and an easy time upholding external expectations. They say that 50% of the population fits into either a questioner or an obliger. That would make sense if these are actually quartiles. So whatever, I'm going down a rabbit hole here. So the obliger is somebody that maybe they just won't take themselves to the gym. They won't start good habits for themselves if left up to their own accord. But they're the person that if they get told that they have to have a paper turned in at work by this date, they're always going to do it. And that's like, these are people who are extremely useful employees as well, is because like it's not that it's like a detriment to a company for them not to be upholding things in their personal life. But when they ask to get something done, because they uphold external expectations, they get that thing done. And so these people are probably the people that will have difficulty going to the gym and are going to find use in what we're going to talk about next. And then there's the rebel. And it's funny because my dad actually tested as a rebel. And he doesn't seem like a super rebellious person, although it seems like it now that he's getting older. And the rebel actually like flies in the face of both of these. And it doesn't mean these people can't get organized. Doesn't mean they can't achieve things in their life, somebody who's a rebel, if they're given internal expectations, they say like, no, why the hell should I do that to themselves, just like we talked about earlier. And if they're given external expectations, they say, no, why the hell should I do that on that as well. And these people tend to thrive in like really structured environments, so they either need to be like their own boss and they need to be an entrepreneur so that they have justification for everything that they're doing, or they need to be in really, really structured systems like the military. And so like rebels actually work really well in the military because everything's just completely drawn out for them. And so they almost don't have to question anything anymore. It's when it's like you actually have to question like why you're doing something that it becomes difficult for the rebel. And so by knowing whether you are inclined towards the internal or external expectations, you can more effectively become accountable and build the habits or the discipline, right? Because discipline is another word for habit, necessary to achieve your goals. So if you can't hold yourself accountable, but you always show up for others, then stop playing stupid solo games. Stop listening to people telling you to pull yourself up by your bootstraps and do it on your own. Get a friend, get a partner that will get you going on this habit. Preferably somebody who already has the habit. If you have a strong desire not to let other people down and you will show up every damn time, then just find the person that you're showing up for. And like a good example of this would be like, I've offered to people all the time, and not many people have taken me up on it. The people who have, I've been really happy that they do, is like if somebody came to me and said, hey, I have a struggle with discipline. I have struggle with getting to the gym. I go, cool. I train at 3 p.m. every day. Show up. I'll be expecting you here. And like, let's train together. And for somebody who is really accountable to somebody else, or that's their friend that's making that deal with them, they're going to show up there every single time. And I still find that a lot of people won't do that. So like, if you struggle to get in the gym, just because this is a fitness podcast as an example, go find somebody who already has a gym habit that you know, that you respect, because you don't want to let down people that you respect. And then make a deal with them. And I guarantee you they're going to be willing to help. Now, you might have to adjust your schedule to go at the time that they go. But, you know, the fact that they're going to be looking out for you, that they're expecting you to spot them, the fact that they're going to text you, like, that's going to be your motivating factor to get into the gym. And it's through that accountability that you're going to go enough times to build the habit to then make it part of your identity, which is what this whole thing has been talking about, right? So here's a few examples of this. Honestly, like, I've had the best training sessions of my life and the most consistent training when I've had an accountability partner. And there's been tons of them through the years. And frankly, I was thinking about it, and there was like, there's even a guy who I know I trained with for a long time. I can't remember his damn name. That's how many accountability partners I've had. And he was excellent. I feel terrible about it. I don't know if, hopefully he doesn't remember my name, so we're even. But here's some examples. When I was in college, my buddy Tyler and I, we were both high jumpers. Both of our goal was to win the national championship in high jump. And we wanted to win the national championship, but we were also each other's competition. So we were each other's competition, and we were each other's accountability partner. And there was a couple motivating factors there. It's like, if I showed up for practice and he didn't, I'm getting a leg up on him. He didn't want that. That was like right in his face every single time. And same thing for me. Like, if I didn't show up for something, or I didn't do the extra reps on something he was doing, like, then I felt as though I was falling behind. And so it was an amazing accountability system. We had high expectations for ourselves. We had high expectations for each other. And for some reason, we both kind of silently agreed, even though we were technically competitors, that it would be easier for both of us to get there together. And I also want to shout out Tyler. He recently got inducted into the Hall of Fame at my college, because he did win a national championship our junior year. And then our senior year, when we were really competing heavily, he got second, I got third. So neither of us quite got there. But man, I think that we finished higher than we would have if we didn't have each other. And I think he would agree. One of the best relationships in my life. Thank you, Tyler. Fast forward to when I decided to play football. After I had done track for 4 years, I was going to play 1 year of football in college, and I was terrified. My buddy Mike Blodgett, he's All-American wide receiver for our football team in Monmouth College, and he was motivated to crush his senior season. He had come off an injury. He knew what kind of talent he had. He knew what kind of team that we had, and he wanted to win a national championship. He wanted to crush his senior season. He wanted to be an All-American. He was highly motivated to get in the workouts. He was highly motivated to get in the running workouts. I just came off track. I had no freaking interest in running anymore, but because I always wanted to show up for him, because he was my roommate and my buddy, then I would always show up for the running workouts, because I'm not going to let him down. And he would always show up for me at the lifting workouts. He still wanted to lift, but I was obsessed with hypertrophy at the time. Shocking that I'm still obsessed with hypertrophy. But he used to make fun of me in the gym all the time, because I'd be like, oh, I got to do my hypertrophy work, because I was so skinny when I was in track that I needed to gain weight before I could be a tight end at the college level. And so, you know, I forced him to do more work in the weight room that would put size on him, and he forced me to do more work on the track that would make us faster. And it was just great having somebody. I wouldn't have trained like half as much that summer if I didn't have him. And then another example, and this is how people can help you in like really hard times. And like, this dude was a godsend. I don't think I've ever really thanked him enough for this. I think about it actually a lot. There was a tough point in my life when I was in grad school, and I was working for, I was bartending for a Mexican restaurant. And my buddy, who was also a server there, Zach, he always wanted to go to the gym. He was just more motivated. I was more motivated to party and live my life up at the time, and I didn't have a whole lot of motivation to get in the gym anymore. But he knew that I knew what I was doing as far as like gym work, and he wanted my knowledge there, and he wanted me to push him as a partner. And I would go out after my shift, and I would drink, and I'd be out until bar closed, like 2 a.m. And I just remember being in this cycle of like, most mornings, the way I woke up was whatever time, I don't even remember what time it would be, like 9 a.m. or something, my door would come flying open. He would come into my house. He would toss pre-workout and hit me in the chest and say, drink this, we're going to the gym. And he would drag me out, and I'd be half drunk going to the gym. And he did that over and over and over again so many times. And I think, you know, one of the reasons he was helping me was, one, he wanted, you know, me to keep programming for us, and he wanted the workouts, but also he wanted me to get better at my life than just sitting around drinking all the time. And he kept me accountable. He kept me in the habit of training. Whereas I think if I, that, during that time, I had fallen off completely, then maybe I never would have gotten back into training again. I would have ended up in a different place. And so a big thank you to Zach for that. Really what I'm getting at, and I know I'm kind of going down memory road with this stuff, is that we should not be scared to ask other people for help. And I found that the more complex the achievements that I chase in my life, the more important it is to find other people that are going the same direction as you and try to help each other get there. You will find that people who have already achieved the goals that you want to achieve, they are rooting for you to get there too, because they want to help other people get there easier than what it was for them. And so they're going to be willing to help you out. So all you have to do is ask. All you have to do is find somebody. And I think that's the hardest part. The fear you have to get over is that actually ask somebody who has already achieved something you want to achieve, because we always think they're better than us for some reason, and they're not, and they don't think they are either. If you can get yourself to just ask that question, hey, will you help me get to where you are? Most of the time they're going to say yes. And so I think if you have struggled with something for a long time and you're listening to this podcast right now, if you struggle to get the habits down, if you struggle to get that discipline, if you tried the motivation cycles and it just peters out for you, then it's time to rely on other people. It's time to rely on accountability. That's what gyms are for. So there's other like-minded people there for you, and you just have to find one that you jive with, that you want to show up for, that you respect, that you're going to make sure that you show up for every single time. And so this week, if there's something that you always wanted to get started on and you had trouble getting started on it, just find a person. Ask the question. That's your hardest task right there, is just send the text message. Just make the phone call. Just approach that person that's always at the same class time as you at the gym, but you haven't been making it as much, and you go up to them and be like, hey, can we start a group chat? And you're going to make sure I show up, and I bet they'll say yes. And that could be the difference between you being where you want to be 2 years from now and you not being where you want to be 2 years from now. And so I think it's always worth taking that chance, because what are they going to say? No. I mean, like, nobody's going to stand there as an adult and laugh in your face and point at you and call you silly. You know, we're not in high school anymore. And so take that chance. Ask the question. Find that accountability partner, and they're going to help you get in. They're going to help you daily build the habit that is necessary for that habit to become a discipline, that discipline to become an identity, and then you never have to think about it again. And that's your path forward. Guys, hopefully this helped. This was a little bit different for us. Please make sure that if you see the clips on this, if you are listening to this podcast, then make sure and comment and let us know that this was actually useful. If you see me in the gym and you're one of our members and listening to this, and you're like, this was actually really useful, Nick, make sure and tell me, because I love talking about this stuff. I'd like to do more of it in the future if it's useful for you guys. You can find more information, fitness, nutrition, and motivational information on all of our platforms. We are at Strength101 on Instagram. We are at Strength101 on YouTube. And we are at Strength101 Podcast on TikTok. Find us there. This was Strength101. Peace out.